Just recently, Charles Taylor, who's the president of Liberia, was indicted by a UN-backed war crimes tribunal over his alleged backing of rebels during a brutal civil war in neighboring Sierra Leone. The indictment and an arrest warrant were issued as Mr. Taylor attended talks in Ghana aimed at ending the ongoing conflict in his country, during which he unexpectedly offered not to stand for re-election should this be stipulated in a peace plan. The arrest order was not heeded, and Mr. Taylor returned to Liberia on a presidential jet, no less, where he claimed that a coup attempt had been foiled. Intense fighting has followed in this ongoing civil war, which has been going on since the mid-1990s. And if I'm not mistaken, we're at the point now where the military opposition to the government is virtually in the capital, which is Monrovia. Joining me now to talk about recent developments in Liberia and hopefully put some of this into some kind of historical perspective for us is Tom Kamara, who's editor of a sadly not currently printing because of the chaos in Liberia, but a Liberian newspaper. He's currently exiled in Holland, where he's continuing to work. And Mr. Kamara, thanks for taking the time to join us this morning.
Thank you.
As I said, I'd like to put things into a kind of a historical perspective this morning. One of the things that that we hear about in the mainstream media is the main armed opposition to the government. They are primarily known as Liberians United for Reconciliation and Democracy. And I think a place to start would be to examine whose interests these people represent.
Well, these rebels are just leftovers from the Liberian Civil War. There were a lot of factions in the early 1990s that got into the contest for power. And what happened was that immediately after Mr. Taylor was elected, he pursued a policy as a conqueror, and most of these fighters fled the country and went into neighboring countries like Guinea and Sierra Leone and Ivory Coast. So what you have now, the Lords, are nothing more than rebels who regrouped with one determination, and that is the one to return home. They've been in refugee camps in the region for almost so many years now, 5-6 years. The ethnic witch hunting, most are Mandingos as an ethnic group that crosses across West Africa. So these are just the remnants of the Liberian Civil War that you've seen on television screen coming back for a military contest.
So, yeah, we have to understand that it's a conflict that's existed for a considerable amount of time.
Yeah.
And I guess the root of the conflict is opposition to President Charles Taylor, who is... I'm trying to think of what the opposite of the word benevolent is.
Yeah.
But if you know what I'm saying, he hasn't been he hasn't been kind to his people, it would be fair to say. And he was indicted this weekend on
war crimes charges.
17 of them as a result of a trial in Sierra Leone.
Yeah.
Part of the commentary about this, or one of the things that I read in on your website that I found interesting, was that there wasn't the expected glee that somebody might expect from an indictment being handed down against this ruthless man.
Yeah.
Can you kind of explain some of that to us? Because I don't think it's clear why that would be, but I think a lot of it is rooted in the immediate effect that the announcement of this indictment had on the Liberian people, and particularly in the capital.
Yeah. The thing is, Ron, is the indictment was expected. If the court had to indict two persons, one of them had to be Mr. Taylor, because he virtually organized the RUF in Sierra Leone. From Liberia, they crossed into Sierra Leone in March 1991 upon his orders, and the war there commenced. So, I mean, that is clear. The question is that you know, whether or not they're going to arrest him. But regarding your question as to the feeling in Liberia, what is clear is that Liberians have wanted Taylor off their back for quite a long time. He's been very ruthless in dealing with the opposition. And so the only option left for most was the military offensive that is now going on. Now, what the court has done, a lot of Liberians have been waiting for some kind of blessing. What the court has done was to offer that blessing. And now he has virtually no choice. Either he surrenders to the court or he fights dying because, yeah, I mean, he remains in his bunker in Monrovia. He would not be able to leave for any other country. He's virtually quarantined in Monrovia. So there's a kind of optimism that finally the Liberian problem is coming to a head-on solution with a court indictment. The court has no choice. They have to arrest him, just as they did in the case of Milosevic in Yugoslavia. So this is a real test of will now. The president of the court has asked the UN Security Council to pass a resolution binding on all states to ensure that Taylor is arrested. And I think it's just a matter of time that he is going to be arrested. He's going to be taken to Sierra Leone for trial. Liberians are very happy over it because they see this as the one possible solution in ending his presidency, which has caused so much misery, not only for Liberia, but for neighbors. You have about over 300,000 refugees in Guinea alone, and so many hundred thousands in Cote d'Ivoire, where, of course, his rebels are crossing early this year to launch another offensive. So, I mean, it's not only a Liberian problem. It has become a regional problem and possibly an international problem.
I perceived some disappointment from a writer of a particular article I read on your website that he hasn't been indicted for his crimes against the people of Liberia, and there was a sense of injustice in that sense.
Yeah. But let's face it. If Taylor were indicted for his crimes in Liberia, that would be another thing. But what we have to remember is that the British played a heavy role in ensuring that he's indicted in Sierra Leone. In the case of Liberia, it is difficult to indict a man who is president and when there is no other power structure to ensure that. Perhaps in the future when he's off the stage, that can be a consideration a matter of consideration. But for now, I doubt whether, you know, with the court indictment hanging over him in Sierra Leone, that he's going to be indicted in Liberia because he is the president. That is, if he survives at all.
Assuming that things go the way one of the two ways that you have indicated that they will, what does Liberia's political future hold?
The future is very bleak. The armed insurgents are divided. You know, their unity is only based on their opposition to Mr. Taylor. And so far, they haven't placed a political face on their guns. They haven't offered any credible political alternative except to get rid of Mr. Taylor. And from Liberia's history, from the early 1990s, the population is really fed up with armed government and a rebel government. But for now, you have to deal with them because they have weapons and they are determined to seize power. I think the only solution, well, not the only, but the most viable solution is international involvement along the lines of Sierra Leone. But you see, Sierra Leone had the British. Liberia doesn't have that kind of a benevolent colonial master. The Americans have kept their distance. Mm-hmm. And so the future is really bleak without a strong international involvement to the level of imposing a government. If a government is imposed and supported by the international community, I think the security environment will be conducive for refugees to return home and for some sort of reconstruction to commence. In the absence of that, you're going to have a lot of power struggle in the months ahead after Mr. Taylor has left office. He has armed a lot of young men around the country, and to disarm these militias is not going to be easy. And I doubt whether any Liberian authority has the means and power to do that. Along the lines of Sierra Leone, where the British and the UN has the largest force, yes, that could work. And most people are seeing, but the UN force in Sierra Leone is virtually doing nothing now that there is some sort of peace there. Why is it that they cannot just cross the border into Liberia and make sure that these militias are disarmed? In that case, then you solve the problem in Sierra Leone, because the armed bandits are coming from Liberia into Sierra Leone. And as long as Liberia remains what it is, Sierra Leone is not safe. It's just a matter of time when they cross the border. The border is very porous, same ethnic groups and so forth. And it's business all over again. So it makes sense, really, to redeploy some sort of UN force in Liberia that could disarm these rebels. Interestingly, Mr. Taylor is calling for a UN force because his back is against the wall. Today he just called for a deployment of a UN force, and I think that is a good indication.
I read also that he's agreed to a truce yesterday. Is that holding up?
He agreed to a truce because his soldiers have kind of regained control over the city. But what I'm hearing is that they intend to carry out the offensive against the rebels. I don't know where rebel positions are right now, but they're not too far from the capital. If that happens, then you're going to see a renewed battles for the capital and a serious humanitarian catastrophe unfolding, as you can already see in the capital. But we have to also remember that the Liberian conflict, which dated from 1989, has had so many ceasefires, broken ceasefires, 13 peace agreements, all broken. So there is not much faith in a ceasefire. Without robust international intervention along the levels of Sierra Leone, I don't see any hope at all, because sooner or later they're going to go back on the battlefield and the conflict starts all over again. It's nothing to celebrate.
Up until now, am I correct in assuming that Ghana has been the primary broker of an attempted peace in Liberia?
Yes, Ghana has been run, but you see, I think this problem has to go beyond the normal phrase African solutions to African problems, because Ghana, Nigeria, and other West African countries were in Liberia from 1990 up to 1997. And it is regrettable that the kind of peace they left behind was no peace at all. Now we see the result of that unfolding. There's a lot of appeasement of Mr. Taylor, who was then declared the strongest warlord among several warlords. So if the Liberian problem is going to be solved, Ghana is not in a position to solve the problem. Ghana itself has been part of the problem because of the regional alliances that emerged in the Liberian war. They've been seen as more pro-Taylor than anything else. It was a Ghanaian general who virtually supervised the capture and subsequent execution of former President Samuel Doe, when Taylor's forces were on the outskirts of Monrovia, as we see today. So Ghanaians are not in a very comfortable position to be trusted as peace brokers. It has to be beyond West Africa. West African states are themselves weak. Ivory Coast is in disarray. Ghana doesn't have the economic means, and plus they are seen as more pro-Taylor. Nigeria is keeping its distance. It has its own domestic problems. Senegal is fighting its own war. So Guinea is flooded with refugees. These countries do not have the means to ensure peace. But without ensuring peace in Liberia, it's going to turn the entire region into one giant refugee camp with permanent relief and no development.
And is it fair to say that the fact that the government of Ghana returned Taylor at the time of the indictment, is that an indication, or can we interpret that as an indication, along with the other things you said, that they are pro Taylor and therefore are a less legitimate broker for peace?
Precisely, because. Interestingly, the Ghanaian the executive secretary of ECOWAS, which is the regional organization, is a Ghanaian who, according to press report, personally escorted Mr. Taylor in a Ghanaian jet to Liberia. And now most Liberians feel that if Ghana had arrested Taylor, they would have solved two-thirds of the Liberian problem at the moment, because they would have avoided fighting in Monrovia. Of course, another school of thought is that the Liberians were going to turn on the Ghanaians in Liberia and, of course, start slaughtering them as they did in the early 1990s because of Ghana's participation in the West African peacekeeping force. And there are reports that Taylor has business interests and his ministers have business interests in Ghana. They've bought homes in Ghana. So Ghana is the only regional country that Taylor feels comfortable with at the, at the present. All these indicate that all the actors within the peace process are less comfortable with the Ghanaian role. But again, the UN would like to see West Africa playing a leading role, and Ghana at the moment is the chairman of the regional organization of West African states, ECOWAS. So, yeah, she has to play the role, but it is a less credible role.
I read on the weekend when the Liberians United for Reconciliation and Democracy offered terms of an original ceasefire, which turned out to not last very long, that they offered Charles Taylor a certain amount of time.
Yeah,
I think it was 72 hours to step down, and I believe that that deadline has come and gone.
Yeah.
What happened at the end of the 72 hours?
Well, it's clear that, from my information, that the rebels were persuaded to pull back from the city, because definitely what happened was the city's 1 million people were now congregated in large places, football stadiums and so forth, and the humanitarian crisis was getting worse by the hour. It would have been it's already a tragedy, but it would have been far worse had the fighting continued. So the rebels have pulled back. Now, the next thing is what sort of a peace agreement they're going to reach in Ghana. Definitely, Mr. Taylor is in a very tight corner. He has to step down, but if he steps down, what are the prospects of his security? If he steps down, any government could turn him over to the Sierra Leone court. If he doesn't step down, of course, the fighting continues. So we have to see what role that the UN and, of course, the West African states can play in charting out a kind of a peace agreement that will address these concerns. My fear is that if he doesn't step down, then, of course, we're going to see an escalation in fighting. And the Sierra Leone court has already said that anyone signing any peace agreement with Mr. Taylor will be signing a peace agreement that has no legal basis because he's a fugitive. The Sierra Leone court has said that Taylor is a fugitive, so he becomes an illegal actor in the entire peace process. The Sierra Leone court said that. So with all these kinds of conditionalities, you know, I don't see how useful his participation is now. But again, he controls a lot of armed band around Monrovia. So actually, it's like holding the population hostage. If you come closer to me, I shoot. It's the kind of scenario that we have. So all will rest on what happens next, what kind of peace agreement, the terms of the agreement, and whether or not Taylor is prepared to abide by them. But the rebels have said that they want him down. They want him to step down. The court has said he is a fugitive. So that is an area that you have.
Is it true that in the government's the recent military offensive largely consisted of undisciplined, I guess, military units? I mean, because we're reading reports here of, bodies littering the streets.
Yeah.
And I'm just kind of trying to get a grip on who's doing the killing.
Well, it's difficult to tell, but, you know, Taylor's record so far from 1990 is, in terms of killings, is not a very good one. What you have in Liberia, Ron, is that you don't have a conventional army in a sense of an army. You have various militias. A lawyer to the president. He's broken down the conventional army, fearing a coup or military uprising. So what he has done is to form overlapping militia groups and with him at the center. So in times like these, you see a lot of young Thai soldiers in the street. I saw some pictures on television just a few hours ago with headbands as government soldiers. You don't have a roster of soldiers. Anyone prepared to fight for bread, and this is no exaggeration, is given a weapon. So the bodies you see in the streets could be bodies of civilians and not necessarily fighters. It's clear that this is an army within an army. Most of the officers have fled the country. It's completely disintegrated. It's just a bunch of Thai soldiers that are loyal to him, and that's what you have. So exactly the bodies in the streets, I presume they are bodies of civilians.
That was the impression I got from what I read, but I also got the impression that it was possibly the result of the actions of government soldiers who may have or allegedly shot these people because they wouldn't leave their homes quickly enough.
The report we have is that there is massive looting going on in Monrovia, and government soldiers who surround a neighborhood and then ask everyone to leave. And if you hesitate to leave, then they shoot you down and then loot your property. So most of the bodies that you find in the streets are most likely civilians who were caught in crossfire or who refused to leave. If you read a little bit on the Liberian war, the level of brutalities have been very, very high. There have been massacres. And unfortunately, you know, these things are not reported in the Western media. You only get glimpses of them here and there. Like Sierra Leone, where you got a full picture. The full picture of the atrocities in Liberia have not yet, you know, emerged. But I assume, according to reports I have, that most of those bodies are those of civilians shot by government soldiers. And that is the picture we have at the moment.
You referred earlier to the worsening humanitarian crisis, and I understand that part of this is brought on by the fact that before the fighting began, there were large numbers of refugees in the outskirts of Monrovia that got forced into the city when fighting broke out.
Yeah.
So there are literally people wandering the streets who don't have any accommodation or food, and what kind of numbers of people are we talking about here? It's thousands, certainly.
Yeah, we're talking about thousands. According to recent UN figures, 60% of the IDPs in the country live in Liberia, and you have hundreds of thousands of Sierra Leoneans and other refugees. And as a matter of fact, the entire city is a refugee camp, because even people who are not refugees do register in refugee camp for rations, upon which they live, because there's virtually no food in the capital, and prices of foodstuff are very high. Unemployment is 85%. And what the attack has done is to really worsen conditions, because the only hospital that was in the city I just read has been closed down. Health facilities are completely non-existent. There is no water. There is no electricity. And the entire city has been transformed into a giant refugee camp. It's a very, very, very dire situation that is going to get worse by the weeks if nothing is done in terms of a ceasefire and creating a security landscape that allows relief agencies to deliver relief and humanitarian protection. No, it is a very, very terrible situation. The government some months ago announced it was unable to pay salaries. It has not paid salaries for 3 years. And civil servants work and get what they can through bribes here. And there is a complete collapse of the state. What you have in a classical sense, this is a state collapse. It has, there's nothing as like a government in the conventional term.
You also mentioned earlier regarding the large UN force in Sierra Leone and how it might be well used as a force to bring peace to Liberia.
Yeah.
But I'm wondering if there's any diplomatic attempt at any or any significant action towards making this happen. Has this been discussed at serious levels?
According to press reports, I read one report that said, quoting an anonymous UN official, that they were indeed thinking about that. And the British UN representative, Jeremy Greenstock, did say a few days ago that from now on, the UN is going to get more involved in finding a solution to the crisis. But beyond that, I haven't seen any substantive move towards actually, you know, making concrete plans. And the longer it takes, I'm afraid, you know, the more ghastly that the situation becomes. They've been talking about it, but not with the concreteness and seriousness, in my opinion, that it requires.
I also read on your website a rather long list of people. Were those other people who were indicted in the same?
No, the list of people. Those are the list of people forbidden to travel out of Liberia. I think you're talking about the UN sanctions list, also.
Right.
The travel ban also on Liberian officials. No, the only one who's been indicted is a Liberian who's been indicted is Mr. Taylor.
So
now,
what,
possibly, you know, as the case progresses or so forth, there could be more indictment of Liberians because he was not alone. The RUF was trained in Monroe, in Liberia. The RUF was armed in Liberia, and Taylor was not alone. But for now, he is the key, as they call it. He's the key indictee among all of them. But no, he's the only Liberian so far. The list you saw is a list of Liberians on UN sanctions, and mostly Taylor's government officials and his family members on that are forbidden to leave Liberia.
Can you maybe describe first the circumstances that led to the existence
Of
the creation of the list? Yeah.
Yeah. No. It was a result of a UN panel of expert report. I think there have been three reports now on Liberia over the years, and the panel came out with the finding that indeed Liberia has been key in sponsoring rebels in Sierra Leone and in other parts of the West African region. And the panel recommended sanctions, first arms embargo, and then after that, a travel embargo. And the list you saw there are actually those that the UN Security Council has approved. They are not supposed to leave the country according to UN resolution and so forth. But the list was the result of a UN investigation that found credible and unequivocal evidence that Taylor has been using the country's resources from the disappearing rainforests, logging companies, and so forth, to buy arms through the black market, mainly via Eastern European arm dealers and so forth, that led to the issuance of the list.
I'm wondering how, because you're an editor of a newspaper, I'm wondering about the state of the media in Liberia. Is it correct to assume that the majority of the media is pro-government, or the majority of the, I guess, existing at this time media? Because I know you've had difficulties, not just now, but also in the past, publishing the print version of your newspaper.
I think the media is in a very deplorable condition, Ron, because the newspapers hardly circulate more than 200 copies. When you have a population that is basically made of refugees, you know, people don't have the buying power. That's one factor.
Okay.
And the next factor is a government clampdown. There have been a lot of arrests and imprisonment of journalists. Most of them have been exiled. The critical ones have been exiled or imprisoned for a long number of years and so forth. What Mr. Taylor did as a warlord when he started the war in the 1990s was to confiscate most of the radio stations that the previous government had built around the country, FM stations, and he converted them into his own. And then when he got to Monrovia, he expanded so that he has what you call a television station, his personal television station. He has a lot of radio stations that he calls it personal, but these were all state properties that he actually confiscated. The critical radio stations, the professional ones, like one that the UN and the Americans sponsored some years ago, were closed down. And so you have the state of the media in such a way that journalists are afraid of it's a censorship. Now, for the war, for example, you have to clear your stories. The best coverage of the war you find in foreign papers, not in local papers, because if you give a critical or correct coverage, you could be in prison. If you really tell the story as it is, you could be in prison. So the media is completely paralyzed. It's most of them are, you can say, the pro-government or self-censored. At the moment, the media is completely dysfunctional.
And we also mentioned already that you are unable to publish The New Democrat currently.
Yeah.
But this is not the first time that you've found yourself in this situation. I think it might be interesting to talk for a few minutes as we draw towards the end of this, the history of your newspaper, because if I'm understanding it correctly, it started at the same time as the current civil war, I guess in the early 90s.
It started a little bit in the mid 90s in Monrovia, but my own problem with Liberian political establishment dates back in the 1980s when I was editor of the state-owned newspaper, and I was in prison several times, and I had to escape from prison to go into exile, miraculously. Then, of course, when the Civil War started, I returned home, and in the mid-1990s, and established the New Democrats, an independent paper, because I thought certain things were missing in the local papers that were there then. And our offices were burned down, and in 1996, Mr. Taylor and other warlords ensured that our presses and computers were burned down, and a hail of gunfire, thinking that we were in the building. They shot in the building for hours and hours. Luckily, we were out of the building. But that's a brief history of our own paper, and so. When after elections, we tried to recommence publication, but Mr. Taylor drove the journalists out of the country and threatened he would invade the offices himself, you know, at one point. So that was a signal that that they had to leave. So most are now living in Ghana, and we have been forced to just go on with the online edition of the newspaper.
Thank you for taking the time to speak with us this morning. It's certainly been very helpful in trying to kind of piece together what the small amounts of information that we get.
Yeah.
We want to also tell people, because the work that you're doing currently is primarily available, since it's not in print at all, on the internet.
Yeah.
And if people want to go and find out a lot more about what's going on, they can do that. And the web address for that is www.newdemocrat.org.